Welcome to Generation Football. Coming up, a report from Algeria, my father's country, and one steeped in footballing history. From the country's liberation struggle from France to recent protests for political reform. I travel there to understand how local football has been an agent for change. But first, what makes a great leader on and off the pitch? I sat down with Vincent Kompany, Burnley Football Club's new manager.
Ball gets played forward, now you squeeze back in.
A former Belgium international player and Premier League legend, Kompany captained Manchester City for 8 seasons during the most successful time in the club's history. We talked about family, identity, and how to make an impact on society.
I don't call myself an activist, but we have opinions. We see if we can help where we can, and that lives in the family, yeah.
Thank you so much for agreeing to speak to me today. You've been the captain of a very successful club and moving into a management position. I wanted to know, when you think about yourself in terms of a leader, what do you think the biggest shift is for you?
As a captain, I think your biggest role is to have a look at teammates if they're having a bad day and, you know, raising the standard and helping them. And as a manager, it's seeing the bigger picture. You have to have absolute belief in what you do. And it's like, you know that the world can be seen in different ways, but for a period of time, all you see is the way you believe in it.
And you're working with a lot of young players, yeah. And there's a lot of focus on them. For example, in the UK and England, we saw in the Euros after the final, it was very unfair the way that many of those players were treated. What do you think is important to instill into the young men that you're working with? You know, there's so much to do with the success, money, power, influence, and the visibility they have.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've named very different kind of problems there. One is it's the social aspect of, you know, racism and abuse on social media and whatever comes with it. And on the other side, you've got what players have to do themselves, the responsibility they have and how they have to conduct themselves. But I think in the end, you have to almost create this bubble towards your work, where you know you're going to have all these external forces that are going to put pressure on everything you do with your life. But you still need to protect your football and you still need to be yourself and to find a balance.
And we've spoken specifically about football, but I'm interested to hear a bit more about the work that you do off the pitch as well. What is it that you've been engaged in that you feel like very passionately about and that you care about?
I don't know. I think most of what I've done off the pitch, I started when I was a player. So I feel passionate about, you know, BX Brussels, which is a charitable organization around sports football in Brussels. 1,200 kids, I'm proud about that we influence every week, every day. You know, there's a homeless issue in Greater Manchester and, you know, in England and probably in so many other countries. And, you know, I try to contribute there. And as well as Children's Villages, which is an organization based around, you know, kids who lose both parents. And, you know, I've done projects with them in Congo, in Africa. I don't deserve any honors or any medals for it, but it is something that can keep me awake at night.
It's about using the platform as well. And that's why I ask you, you know, so that there's an opportunity to put the light on the issue.
Well, then, if I can add to this, I think the most important thing is, you know, giving access to opportunities, education. You know, I really strongly believe in that. And I come from Brussels, so one day it's mentioned for terrorism, the other day it's mentioned for being a drug capital of Europe. And actually, it's so much more. It's one of the biggest talent pools of Europe. But you need opportunities, and opportunities don't come there just because you say, hey, by the way, we're going to open up, you know, football clubs, or we're going to open up schools. It's structural. It's how you affect leadership, how you affect anything to do with, you know, decision-making in society. And to be at these tables and to be... So you engage me on something that I can go much further, but that's, for me, crucial. You know, you can't talk about anybody else without having those people at the table who want to help you solve the same problems as they need to solve, you know, so... Yeah.
And primarily, though, education opportunities is what you feel that it's opening the doors up.
And shared, you know, power in terms of... You can see me and you with the face of this interview, but what's important for where an organization, where society is going, is who's making decision in the boardrooms. You know, most of it starts in a pyramid, whether it's a pyramid within government, within corporations, within industry. If representation is right there, that the rest will follow. I mean, if I know that there's a guy there, and when there's a discussion about racism, sometimes, you know, a simple thing, it could be, you know, someone will shout something really stupid, whatever the color of his skin, you know. I think when there's representation at the very top, it takes it a few notches down. You're like, okay, it's going to get dealt with. And people are not going to get away with it if they try and just shove it under the carpet.
I feel like starting to talk about this stuff, it does bring me to the next question, which is about your parents. Do you feel like they helped instill those things that you're talking about, that kind of caring about equal opportunities and opening that door up, or did it come from somewhere else?
My mother, unfortunately, she passed away a long time ago, but my mother was the type of person that would get angry at me for earning a lot of money. So that I had to explain, no, you know, don't worry, if it comes to me, it's better than in other people's hands. But and my dad has just been someone that had to fight his way all the way from Congo as a political refugee, then became the first black mayor in Belgium. So we do have a little bit of an activist family, but, you know, it's a different generation, different time. I don't call myself an activist, but we have opinions. We try and see if we can help where we can, and that lives in the family, yeah.
And when you think about football, a lot of it links back to community and identity. And that could be around a club, it could be around a region, it could be around a nationality. And I wanted to know, for you, how much do you think your different identities, the different shirts you've worn, have influenced the priorities that you've kind of expressed?
Yeah. I mean, there's a good saying for this. I say you're a product of your environment. And it really is. I mean, but you got to understand Brussels first. You grow up and you get on one side of the street someone speaking Dutch, and on the other side of the street someone speaking French, and then you've got Arabic, Lingala, whatever language you want, Spanish, Italian. It's so diverse. So when you grow up in Brussels, you feel like you're a part of the world much sooner than anywhere else. And so then when you start traveling, like I went to Germany, I went to England, and it feels very natural.
But also, how much of that do you think comes from also being from the background that you're from? You know, having parents who have come from another country, the, I guess, second generation impact.
If you really look at it for its potential, you know, just having that diverse background, it's a wealth that you possess, because you do start with a lot of disadvantages. And that was my story when I grew up. You know, I was from an area where we did start with a lot of disadvantages, but I never looked at my background as one. It was, for me, it was a wealth. It was something that I possessed that I felt one day other people be jealous from. You know, I'm from Congo and I'm proud of it. And I'm from Brussels and I speak Dutch and I speak French. And, you know, I own it 100%, all of it.
You also have Manchester, or Greater Manchester, or the north of England.
Yeah.
It's different to the south, right? How do you think that's impacted you and shaped you?
No, what I like over here is in the north, people say it as it is. And people own up to their mistakes, you know. And you can have an argument with someone and the next day, you know, you're still part of the same team and, you know, you move on and you work together towards the next goal. And I try to do it as well when in my relationship with players. It's like, look, you know, I think he's better than you at the moment. And this is what we need to do to get you to compete. And in the beginning, it's hard to take. But eventually they said, you know what, at least he told me. At least he told me. And it's better.
I wanted to know if there's anything you can think of in terms of influence for you, anything that marked you when you were growing up, or even maybe later, in terms of potentially books or stories about people or anecdotes.
Yeah, I think I grew up with almost like the greats of my father, you know, and being black, and it's, you know, it's weird to say because my background is white and black. But, you know, color of my skin is dark, so I was black. And then, you know, you're looking for success stories. So you look at Muhammad Ali, you look at Pele, and they're before my generation, but you look at Nelson Mandela and, you know, just people who have an impact who can do it. and that's kind of your fuel. I don't think there was that many more than that, you know, just like it was the same five or six people for everyone that was black growing up, and that was your inspiration. I'm nowhere near, you know, any of the guys that I will ever mention, but I'm just relentless and I just keep coming back.
When you think about legacy and your relentlessness, what are you relentlessly pushing for? What do you want to leave behind?
I think that's such a difficult question to answer. When I wake up every day, I can't say that I know there's a bigger picture to it all, but I can't say that I wake up every day because, you know, my legacy needs to be something. No, I wake up every day because I'm passionate about what I do. And I think legacy is created by you eventually being good at what you do and inspiring others and, you know, doing it in a way that empowers others as well. And I don't know how or what the end goal is there, but I know I'm not going to do it on my own. And I know that because of my success, if I can be successful, I'm going to make sure that others can grow as well and others can be better.
Do you mind if I ask, do you believe in anything? Like, do you feel particularly religious or anything? Just the way you described that, I don't know, it made me just wonder.
Well, there's we're in Burnley, so I can be straightforward on everything. We're in the north, we keep things simple. But no, look, it's an unanswered question for me. So, but again, it's this thing where in a world where you've got to be black or white, you've got to be Muslim, Jewish, or Christian. You've got to be so many things. And then, if you're not Black Lives Matter, and you're White Lives Matter, and if you're not this, you know, sometimes you don't know, and you try and figure things out, and that's fine.
So agnostic? No, I'm joking.
No, it's not that.
Like, you just feel like it just feels interesting because it does
If I die, do I want to go to heaven? I'd rather go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's better. If I die, do I want my children to believe in heaven? Definitely. Make it easier for them, make it better for them. Do I have the answers? No, I think, you know, I know a lot of very religious people, and it's a conviction, and it's really spiritual. It's really something that is a drive in their life, and, you know, I'm probably not on that level, but I respect it 100%.
Thank you very much for speaking with me today. I appreciate it. I'm so glad we could have you on Generation Football, so thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
In Algeria, football has always been more than a game on a pitch.
كلتر عندنا كلتر هادم شنو الكلب هادي هادي كما يقولوا حيت مجاهدين من نبدا الثورة هنايا
السبور يعني با اندي سوسيال دو لا بوليتيك السبور اي بوليتيك
Journalist, I've covered a lot of stories on football in Europe, but I've come to Algeria, my father's country, to find out how football has shaped society and what the game means at a local level. My first stop is in the neighbourhood of Belwazdad, home of the CRB Football Club. Founded just days after Algeria's independence in 1962, CRB is one of Algeria's most popular and successful clubs.
Assalamu alaikum.
Tomorrow, it's playing in Africa's version of the Champions League, and fans are snapping up tickets.
Merci alaikum. Saha.
Can you explain why you're a CRB fan?
Why I'm a CRB fan? Because my first team in my life, and I love it. I love it so much. من نبدا التورا انا يا اختي التورا الجزائريه بدات من هنايا وراحت.
Football is woven into the social and historic fabric of Algeria. Right back to the early 1950s when the war for independence from France began. I met with one of Algeria's most renowned football journalists, Yazid Wahib.
I was always taught that the Algerian national team was born out of the FLN team, and the FLN led the movement for independence from France. And that was back in the 1950s, which they succeeded in 1962. What does that time do to shape the relationship that Algeria has with football now?
L'histoire du FLN est une période unique. La révolution déclenchée en 54, l'Algérie avait des joueurs, des footballeurs, qui ont commencé à jouer en Algérie, qui étaient jeunes, et qui ont été recrutés par des clubs français de l'autre côté de la Méditerranée. Pour leur dire, il faudrait que vous quittiez vos clubs en France et que vous alliez vous rendre en Tunisie pour constituer l'équipe du FLN. L'histoire de l'équipe du FLN, ça fait partie de l'histoire complète du mouvement de libération nationale. C'est des gens qui se sont engagés dans la révolution, pas avec des armes, pas avec un fusil, ils n'ont tué personne, mais ils ont fait de la propagande pour la cause algérienne grâce à leur talent, à leur réputation. Un politique algérien avait dit à l'époque, cette équipe du FLN a fait avancer la révolution algérienne de 10 ans.
Football's role in championing independence from the French didn't just end with the national team. Here in Algiers, the football club Mouloudia was created with a very specific political agenda. Abdelkader Drif was one of the early directors of Mouloudia. He's an iconic figure in Algerian football.
Can you tell me a little bit about the history of Mouloudia as a club in Algeria?
Il est le doyen des clubs algériens parce que né dans la douleur en 1921, dans une époque coloniale la plus dure. Cette idée, j'ai là, c'est un des petits-fils de l'émir Abdelkader, le grand résistant. Il a dit, voilà ce que nous allons faire. Nous allons créer une association, donc de caractère sportif, bien entendu. Il a dit, nous allons choisir une date symbole de l'islam, qui est le Mouloud, c'est-à-dire la naissance du prophète. Mais le football, ça a été, disons, la possibilité pour les jeunes Algériens de se structurer d'une manière telle dans un club qui est à eux et qui est musulman par rapport à l'européen, parce qu'il ne faut pas oublier que nous étions colonisés.
Football's impact as a force for social change didn't wane in the decades after Algeria's independence. Stadiums became spaces where fans could vent their disillusionment with the political class, singing about unemployment, corruption, and falling living standards. In 2019, these chants became the anthems of the nationwide protest movement, the Hirat. The Hirat led to the resignation of President Bouteflika after almost 20 years in power. Years have passed since the Hirat, and I wanted to understand what football means to fans today. I've come to watch a match between Algeria's CRB and Sierra Leone's Bow Rangers for the CAF Champions League. For many fans, football has become their main source of national pride.
You're going to win today, champion, OK?
CRB Society stood. محمد بنوجداد أسس الثورة في الجزائر. يعني هو اللي احنا عايشين ونحبوه ونموتوا عليه. هذا هو الدرب تاعنا احنا الأرجاء، هذا هو الدرب تاع الأرجيريين والمغرب.
وصول الله جمهور رانا مغمومين في عندنا غير بالون.
Je vais demander autrefois la même chose. The Algerian national team or CRB? Which
one? across the way, which is impressive because we're now in Sétif and that's 3 hours. So they've made a really long journey to get here. It's amazing to be able to experience the atmosphere. Insider information from a local sports journalist.
Le CRB, c'est un des clubs historiques de l'Algérie. En fait, c'est un club des plus titrés et c'est le club qui est le plus en forme ces dernières saisons. Le club reste sur une victoire en Coupe d'Algérie, 3 championnats d'affilée. Donc, on peut dire que c'est la meilleure équipe actuellement en Algérie.
Everyone loves football in the world. In Algeria, what's the relationship with football like?
En Algérie, on a une relation très très particulière avec le football parce que le football a aussi fait partie de l'histoire de ce pays. En fait, le football avait une place très centrale au sein de la société.
A clear victory for CRB. I wanted to speak to one of CRB's football stars, Zakaria Draoui. He also plays for the Algerian national team, which won the 2021 FIFA Arab Cup. Draoui is one of the top talents in Algerian football today.
So many fans came like 3 hours from Alger just to come and support you. How does it feel, the relationship with the fans at CRB for you?
العلاقة بين الفريق تاع الشباب بالوزداد والعلاقة بين الأنصار واللاعبين علاقة قوية. الحمد لله احنا حققنا الأهم هو الفوز ب3-0. فرحنا هذا الجمهور بما شقاش على 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 بابك. إن شاء الله نزيدوا مازال استحقاقات أخرى إن شاء الله نشيد نزيدوا فرحة في قادم استحقاقات.
CRB's win today proves that if Algeria invests in its local talent, it can hold on to its place as one of the best teams in African football history. In my last few days here, I wanted to understand what the future holds for the next generation of young players. I met Mouloudi Efan Bilal at his son's football practice. This is one of the only spaces in the neighborhood where kids get to train.
For young people, like, what does football mean in Algeria?
Le ballon, c'est notre vie. Et l'autre, c'est la vie. Parce qu'ils n'ont rien, ils n'ont rien. Ils n'ont rien que le football. Imagine, donc, une semaine complète, on est خدام. Fin de semaine, tu pars au stade pour décompresser. Et c'est sacré, hein? Le football, c'est sacré.
A lot of very talented players leave the country to find opportunities. What do you think needs to be done to kind of nurture that talent in Algeria?
كان beaucoup beaucoup de talent. هنا كي تشوف هاد لي جون قاعدين هادو ما قاع يعرفوا يلعبوا بالون. ولو كما يلقاوش دوكا لهنايا لي مويان يروحوا نص طريق. وميليو تشوما ما يقدروش يروحوا بعيد صح ولا لا دوك انت ابسط الاشياء ما يلقاوهمش ما يقدرش يكمل هو يكره يدير لي فورس تاعهم بعد يكره يدخل لهنا ما يلقاش بالون ما يلقاش ستاد ما يلقاش لا ليميير ما يلقاش الدوش ما يلقاش الماء ان شاء الله نتمناو حنايا من هنايا يبدا هذا ما كان وان شاء الله كاين ديجا بزاف عندنا بوكو دو طالون كاين بوكو طالون
Football is part of the lifeblood of Algeria, reflecting the nation's hopes, dreams, and frustrations. Right back to the struggle for independence. But in spite of the challenges football faces here and the talent drain of its top players, aspiring young footballers will continue to play the game they love, whenever and wherever they can.